Welcome to the Bengals Beat Podcast, presented by JosephAuto.com and Inquirer Sports. Here, every Tuesday, your Cincinnati.com Bengals beat writers take you inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Hear from players, coaches, and anyone else relevant to the team throughout the week. Remember, you can subscribe on iTunes and Google Play or listen on our must-have Bengals app. Let's go.
All right, welcome to the latest edition of the BBP, the Bengals Beat Podcast. Paul Inner Jr., Jim Osarski are here with you, coming to you live from the Inquirer Podcast Studios. We're out of the bunker. We're into the studio.
Yeah. We're giving people a little taste of everything. Mm-hmm. First it was BBP on the road with C. Trent Rosecrans behind the wheel. And then we did Thursday night prediction from Moreland Lager House right before BTS. Now we're at the Inquirer building.
Yeah. We're taking everywhere. We're taking you inside and outside. Although I will say, that's the road trip BBP, the road trip podcast, is one of my favorites. I feel like I had a number of people just say, man, it felt like we were in the car with you. And I thought, well, that's not the greatest. It does. You hear that. It's just like if you were riding back from Pittsburgh with us, I feel like. Even though with the bad sound from the car, you know, the sound can't always be great. But I think that's part of the feel.
Yeah.
That's what it's like being on the road. Sometimes you got to do those road trips. So we'll do another one after Cleveland.
Yeah.
That's the Cleveland drive. Why? You're not excited about the Cleveland drive? It's Cleveland. Yeah. Cleveland is not great.
No.
But I will say, last year, I did have a lot of fun in Cleveland. We did the Great Lakes Brewery Tour, and things pretty much spiraled from that point. But it was a good time. I want to do the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame this year. I've just never done it. For whatever reason, as many times as I've been to Cleveland, I've never gone. You and I should go to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and give a review on the BBP.
Yeah, it sounds good. I've been to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame once. Made a trip in... Well, it was the very first year. I can't remember the years. The first year that the Browns came back.
Yeah.
I went that year. When you're
99.
That's how long ago this was, when you can go on eBay and like actually buy tickets for less money than face value. Like, the whole purpose of an online auction.
You know how many people have been inducted into the Hall of Fame since the Browns came back?
Well, I don't really care about that, because what happened was that weekend was the it was like a hip-hop exhibit, and there was a wing where a Phoenix Shakur had donated, or at least for display, like all of Tupac's like handwritten notebooks and rhymes and some clothes that he wore on videos. And so it was like I got to see all of that, which was really cool. And then in the game, the ref threw the bean threw the flag.
Oh, and Orlando Brown game.
And it was crazy. We were sitting in the dog pound, and again, I had never seen. So I am a freshman in college, and I had never seen grown men eat out of dog food cans.
Yeah, it's odd.
With spoons and like have dog spoons. Treats.
They must have been really up yeah, going upscale that day. They
don't use spoons.
Normally it's just face in.
It was, and then so I had heard about, and that was the reason we went, because it was like I'd heard about the dog pound, and then the Browns went away, and then they were back.
Yeah, it's every bit.
And then
friend.
I saw that. So I mean, that was a long time ago, you know, but I figured I saw all I needed to see.
You saw what you needed
in that
to see.
Shot.
Yeah. Yo, you're right about that. Yeah, so Phoenix Shakur gave all that stuff up. You know, Tupac's still alive. Like, he probably just wrote that for her. He probably was like, what do you need, something for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? She called up Tupac in Tahiti and was like, hey, can you write me some stuff from a notebook? Do you have any old notebooks? Where'd you leave those? Were they under your casket? You know? And because I'm telling you, I just saw a whole thing. Tupac was just like in New York City. Yeah, he was just in New York City, just walking around behind somebody's live shot for some weirdo YouTube clip. And I was like, there it was. It was him.
Oh my God.
Tupac's alive. He's out there.
I'm glad you said Tahiti, because he can't be in Cuba, because now that Cuba's opening up,
yeah,
people can't hide. Dead people can't hide there
now.
No more.
He might have moved now. Yeah, I'm telling you, I am 100%. There's no, listen, the dude called himself Machiavelli. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, how many clues does a guy got to drop?
You'd be hard pressed to find a bigger fan than me of that guy, but I am not a he's alive dude. I was when I was like, you know, 17. I wanted to believe it. Yeah. But too much has happened in the world.
Too much has happened.
A man like that would not have been silent this long. Just to, like, chill on a
beach. He's released four albums since he died.
Like, seven.
Sorry. I mean, come on.
But none that say.
Tupac's showing up in, like, weirdo old videos, and like, behind a closet, just sneaking out. I'm telling you.
That's a Chappelle Show skit.
No. He's out there. I'm telling you. He's alive. He's probably listening to this right now. Big Bengals fan. Tupac.
Our pop culture references are so old.
Yeah. You're right. We're not. We're really not new.
Walking Dead. When he shows up on The Walking Dead.
Yes. Wouldn't that be great? I love it. All right. So we move on now. 5 minutes. Sorry about that. I did not anticipate to go on a Tupac's Alive rant in the first 5 minutes of the podcast. We'll move it forward. So anyway, Bengals very much alive. I'll tell you what. The Bengals being 8-0 was just as believable as Tupac being alive before this season started.
Yes.
I mean, you're talking about we've joked about this all year, but we just can't help but keep laughing as you think about way back when they were 3-0, 4-0, and our photographer Kareem said to me, "Man, what are we going to do when they're 12-0 and 13-0? Right. Are we going to be flying all of our photographers everywhere? Should we look into that?" And I said, "Kareem, shut up. I will fly you everywhere if they're really going to be undefeated at that point in the season." That's crazy talk.
Yeah, we need to start a GoFundMe on the BBP because Paul Daner Jr.
He's
got bets to pay.
I got bets to pay everywhere.
Some expensive ones.
Oh, Jags.
Like flying Kareem all over the West Coast.
The Jags were so jaggy this weekend. And they had the game. First of all, they were going to get the ball back with 2 minutes left, down five, to go beat the Jets. Down five. And they fumble a punt. Okay. So the Jets go and score. Well, guess what? Bortles just zing, zing, zing. Three plays, 72 yards, 40 seconds. Boom, they go get a touchdown. They kick up. They end up getting the ball back again. They drive all the way down and throw a pick. Fumble at the goal line. I mean, it's just they're so close, Jim. They're so close. Their offense is moving the ball. They just keep being so jaggy.
Yeah, and they still may win the AFC South.
Now they're 2-6. They're 2-6. I need them to go 4-4 down the stretch to hit my number, and not have to go pay for the precinct meal. Oh, anyway, yeah, we do need GoFundMe for my bets that are all losing everywhere. So. Anyway, but so back then, this talk of the Bengals going undefeated this far, it was just crazy. But now, after they conquer the latest demon, not that it's really a demon to conquer to beat the Browns at any right. point, no matter if it's playing at midnight or whatever, but, you know, everybody likes to talk about the primetime thing, and 1 year pretty much to the day that Andy Dalton 2.0 happened, Andy Dalton 139.8 happened.
Yeah.
You know, another solid day from him after kind of a shaky at times first half, but then they just turned it on and threw the ball to Tyler Eifert a lot.
Yeah.
And that worked out pretty well for their 31-10 win against the Browns. They are now 8-0. Denver loses. They are 7-1. So you now have it where the Bengals are. If the playoffs started today, which would be very odd at the midway point for
right.
them to do that, they would be amongst the two teams getting a bye.
Yes.
Which is the most important thing that we are tracking the rest of the way out this year, because the AFC North, in case you couldn't tell when Ben got hurt again this weekend, is over. All but over. I mean, will they even celebrate?
Keep winning. This is their third win without that dude.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I mean, but they were basically with him. I mean, how many of Antonio Brown's 284 yards were with because
that's
of Ben?
True.
Although he
that's
did
true.
Have the one long one from Landry Jones. Right. But they lost to Kansas City with Landry Jones.
Well, it's not so much a division. This is a whole other thing. We can talk about this as we get going here. But, you know, Bengals fans, I think, need to keep an eye on. I mean, the Steelers, that Raiders game was big because Steelers are in that conversation of, like, that last wild card spot. And if you're the Bengals, and you don't, if you're the Bengals, you don't want to go 13-3, miss the bye, and have to host the Steelers.
No, not at all.
You don't, even if it is Landry Jones and, you know, Isaiah Pede running the ball. You don't want that first round of the playoffs.
Anybody but the Steelers.
Yeah.
Of course. It doesn't matter. I mean, I just keep going back to 2013 where everything fell perfectly. The Bengals had the three. They got this crap Chargers team that backed into the playoffs only because Kansas City was playing its reserves. And you know, everything set up perfectly. They're at home, and they just get blown off the field. Everyone said that year, you don't want just anybody but the Steelers. You don't want to see them. And it wasn't the Steelers. It was the Chargers, and it still didn't matter. So I just don't think you can really even think of it. But you're right. I mean, if there is one team that you probably don't want to see, it's Pittsburgh just because of the rivalry aspect of it. But, you know, so be it. So here they are at 8-0, and looking at – we talked a little bit on BTS last week about how many is it going to take to get that bye, and saying maybe 14 might be that number. I mean, Denver is – you got to feel Denver's going to lose again. I mean, Denver, I would be do they seem fraudy to you? I mean, no. I know it's easy to say after their first loss they did hammer the Packers, but now you look at the Packers and you say, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm still not a believer in the Carolina Panthers going to the Super Bowl, but I guess I have to come around a little bit to say that defense is still, I mean, Josh Norman and some of those guys are beyond pretty good. I mean, they're so. You know, maybe what we found out is that Green Bay's offense can't roll with elite defenses. No, I don't think Denver's a fraud. Denver might be the 13-3 team. You know, this might have been the one hiccup that we talked about, you know, the Bengals need to avoid to get the bye. You know, Denver might have ran into it because right now, I don't think either of us would say Denver would beat New England. So
at home, I mean, we'll find out.
Right,
we'll find out in a few weeks. I mean, when they host them, that'll be a massive game. I mean, at this point, if you're the Bengals, I don't think you care if it's one or two. I mean,
you need the.
Although there is a, right. I mean, the difference between one and three is like
huge,
cavernous.
Yes,
cavernous. One is a cakewalk to the AFC title game.
Yes,
and hosting it. Two is not only. Now you've got to play that three. You've got to play Denver or New England in that first game. And three, you got to win a game just to have a chance to go to the two.
Right.
I mean, there's a cavernous difference.
Yes.
So if you're looking at potential results, I just don't know that the Patriots are going to lose. You know.
Yeah. I don't see
who are they going to lose to? And they're so good at avoiding the hiccup.
Right.
I mean, historically.
They've done this. The principal players on that team, meaning the coach and the quarterback, have been there, done that with this whole thing. And I just don't think that over the years has proven that trickles down to number 53 on that roster. So it's not unfathomable to say, oh, yeah, New England can go 16-0. Because, A, they've done it, and, B, they just don't care.
Yeah.
And it won't bother them. So Denver doesn't seem like a fraud because that defense is very good. Peyton Manning, for all of his issues, still, even with special teams, were able to get back into that game in Indianapolis. We've seen him make throws that matter to win games. So they're not a fraud. It's just, you know, they had the hiccup against a bad Colts team. The Bengals can't have that. You know, they need to – they've got two games, and we'll run through the schedule here. They've got two games they – could lose, and in my opinion, six they should win. And as long as they don't lose one of those six, 14-2 could get them in, because even at strength of schedule, puts them over Denver. Denver.
I mean, if they lose at Denver, it changes things a little bit. But
Denver,
I mean,
lost to. I would expect Denver to lose to New England. And their other loss would be in the AFC to the Colts. So the Bengals would still get that AFC tiebreaker over.
Wouldn't it go head-to-head?
Oh, it is head-to-head, right.
Go head-to-head. So you're, I mean, but, that's, I mean, that, somewhere that would be a there, big right. game. That would be a, I mean, that's right. if they can't go to Denver and win.
Right.
I mean, so, I mean, let's run down it. And let's rank these here a little bit of easy, hardest to easiest. So we've got Monday Night Football against the Texans, which the Texans are the Texans. The Texans... they're not as bad as their record would say. And I know we'll hear this all week.
Right.
Because that's what you hear every week.
Right.
But they're really not. I mean, they have some decent pieces. It's kind of weird how they've been able to – what outside of just Brian Hoyer and Ryan Mallett shenanigans that Bill O'Brien got himself into. I mean, their defense has not been – as good as it normally is, but they still have J.J. Watt. They've still got some good players on defense. you know, without Arian Foster, they've struggled a little bit. And DeAndre Hopkins is having a great year, an insane year. They'll have their hands full with him. I think they're lacking another target there. But on Monday Night Football, you never know. I that could be a little more interesting. At Cardinals, I think – are we in agreement that at Broncos and at Cardinals are the very clear? Yeah. I mean, that's clear.
Yeah.
They'll lose one of those two, if not both.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, I can't say anything at this point because I didn't think that we'd be sitting here at 8-0 discussing a crazy topic like, will the Bengals go 16-0? Right. I mean, what world are we living in?
Right. Dogs and cats.
Living together. Mass hysteria.
Yeah. Another old pop culture ever. Yeah. I'll say that they'll beat Houston. I mean, even if they come out, you know, and aren't as fantastic as they were on Thursday night or before the Pittsburgh game, they're just better. And I think this team, until otherwise, has proven to me they will beat the teams they're better than. Arizona, I have a hard time. Arizona, to me, has a complete package of offense and defense, you know, that might be able to expose some of the seeds of concern.
They lost to the Steelers.
They did lose to the Steelers. That's why it's crazy to me. And maybe you can say that, chalk that up to, like, crazy NFLness, but, like, and Arizona's not perfect, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
No, they're far from perfect. I mean, I think that game will be interesting, but, I mean, you would never look at that and say, well, the Bengals can't go to Arizona and win. I mean, why not? There's no reason to believe it. And the rest, the Rams, to me, is the Rams will be a tougher game than the Steelers will be.
I think so, yeah.
Because the Rams can do something that maybe could give the Bengals trouble, and that's shove Todd Gurley down their throat.
Right, and they have had, if there's one, you know, we talked about some of the issues in the secondary, which to their credit have been cleaned up a little bit the last few games. The one thing that has not been cleaned up is elite-level running backs get theirs.
Mm-hmm.
And Le'Veon Bell was right on pace for a huge game. I mean, Jamaal Charles, for as bad as the Kansas City offense was, he got his. You know, Marshawn Lynch didn't play, but Thomas Rawls got his. I mean, so this team has had its issues in stopping that type of running back. So you're right, that could be. But, you know, on the other end, they've got Nick Foles. You know, so it's you know. They had some offensive line issues going into this past Sunday, so who knows, it'll be down the line. But
they also have another thing that has kind of creeped up, and that's this, you know, you're now talking about 2 weeks in a row where we saw sacks in quite a few of them. I mean, Pittsburgh was able to get to Andy Dalton, and then Andy Dalton was running for his life a lot of, especially the first half, against Cleveland, who was really able to get back there. Paul Kruger was tormenting that side. So also, when you take in St. Louis, they might have the recipe to expose a couple of cracks that the Bengals have shown, is that in recent weeks we've seen a lot of Andy Dalton running for his life, and we've seen this defense struggle to stop the run. That's what St. Louis does best, those two things. So you should be nervous about that game. But you're back into the 1 o'clock at home hole that they've played so well in this year. So and they do have Nick Foles at the end of the day. So you know, I actually like the Bengals in that one. The Steelers, and then after that, you know, you're at the Gabberts. You've got the Ravens, who will just be, boy, won't they have 1 foot out the door.
Right.
Last game of the season on the road, they are done.
Yes.
They're really interested in just ending it. And we're talking about at the Browns, which, although I did in the preseason predict that as an L, just because this team has a weird way of struggling at the Browns. If Joe Hayden plays, they can get healthy. They were in a buzzsaw, the Browns.
But
that was
unfortunate.
At
that point, it'll be interesting, though, to see who's left. You know, I mean, Joe Hayden is in the middle of his second concussion recovery. So if he plays again, when he probably will, let's be honest. I don't know, man, with this concussion stuff, if you're that dude, I'd mail it in.
Yeah.
You want to risk a third concussion in a season? I mean, your career might be over.
Yeah.
I mean, the way that things are going now with some of this stuff. So, you know, in all seriousness. So at that point of the year, you know. If I'm the Browns, even say, you know what, you might want to take the year off. I don't know. You know what I mean? He's that good, and I don't know if, again, three concussions in a year is not a... I mean, you're more susceptible.
If he is playing, though, they had a lot of their guys. I mean, they just had so many guys.
Josh McCown has played. But, you know, trying to forecast what they'll be doing at that point.
It's hard.
Yeah.
Bottom line is that was a huge game for the Bengals was the Colts beating Denver. Because that really could end up being the difference. And the end is their little hiccup in Indy there because – it's just so tough. I mean, we've never had a year in the NFL where three teams have been 8-0. And you're looking at now, I mean, the Bengals, as well as they've played, are still in a real dogfight to avoid a really tough situation, which would be being that three seed.
It is.
That's not an enviable spot. So.
That Denver game, you know, we highlighted at the beginning of the year because of where it was Monday night again, Peyton – prime time, all that stuff. Where now, it's to your point, Paul. It's bigger picture than that. It means so much more.
Yeah.
Than just sort of the kind of if you think about those things, they're so kind of silly in a way, like whatever. But now, like, it matters because it could literally determine whether or not this team plays in the AFC Championship game just on you know how the seeding could. It's amazing,
and just because of the way that it's so top heavy, it's just a rare circumstance, and so we'll see how that all plays out. But I mean, I still can't believe we're even talking about this.
So to kind of finish that thought, I do think, as of now, I think this Bengals team is 14-2.
Yeah,
and I think the losses are in Arizona. I think Arizona.
Why are you afraid? You're afraid to say it. Like you
14-2.
You wimpily said that. Like, you almost don't believe it.
That's what I think that's what it is.
Yeah.
I think because I thought when we did our preseason predictions, I think we were both at 11-5.
Yeah.
You know, we both had them win in the North. You know, we felt this could be a good team. We just didn't think they were elite.
We didn't see the next level because we didn't see what nobody saw,
right,
which was Andy Dalton.
Exactly. So it is and to me, 8 games of an NFL season, beating Seattle the way they did, going on the road and beating Baltimore and Pittsburgh the way they did, and I don't really care right now what those records were. In the moment, those were big wins.
Yeah.
And tough wins. So, to me, they've proven it. They can beat the teams they should beat, and to me, what was the trap game? The one after Baltimore was supposed to be a trap game.
The Chiefs.
Chiefs. And Cleveland's supposed to be a trap game. Well, this team is over that.
Yeah, they don't.
They've taken this one week at a time thing and embraced it and run with it.
And the momentum has built now to where everybody is feeling something special happening and can't wait to get out there that next Sunday. And no matter who they're playing, because they can't wait to go see what they're going to do next, who they're going to beat next, how they're going to beat them next.
Right.
And that's a powerful thing.
Yes.
That's what New England bottles every year is, creates this excitement to go out there every week and continue this special run, because now it is special.
Right.
I mean, at 8-0, it's historic for this franchise and for a lot of franchises.
Yeah.
And when you create that in a young, emerging group that feels like they have everything that they need, that's powerful. And you don't lose game. You don't lose when you have teams that are rolling like that.
No.
Because you don't catch them snoozing.
Right.
Everybody's going to give the Bengals their best shot, but the Bengals are bringing their best shot every week right now because they want to – deep down in places you don't like to talk about, another old pop culture references, you know, they don't want to talk about 16-0, but they need 16-0. They want 16-0 because that chip, that carrot does mean something for these players. If they lost, it wouldn't matter.
Right.
But that motivation when you're now halfway there plays, to me, I think, with these guys. You know, no matter we talk to them, they're all going to say no week to week. We're not thinking about it. But you know you have something special.
Right.
You may not be thinking about 16-0, but you're thinking about the possibilities if you just keep playing and winning like this.
Right. And so especially because New England did it so recently, and teams have gone 15-1. Like, it's not a absurd thought. Like, in the NFL world, it might be absurd in Cincinnati in terms of, like, What?
It's still kind of absurd.
You know, but it's people around the country have had this conversation. You know, I think in the notes on Friday at Cincinnati.com, I mean, I think there's been 25 teams have started 9-0, and there have been 9 in the last 10 years or something to that effect. That, mm-hmm. Don't quote me specifically. Go back and read it.
Yeah, read it.
The fact.
You should read it. We need our clicks.
Yeah. But, I mean, so it's like, so this isn't sort of rare. I mean, it's rarefied air, but, you know, I mean, these guys are old enough to know, the Chiefs did it 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Colts did it 4 years ago. Patriots did it five. I mean, like, it's been done. So, like, you know, it's not like this crazy thing, you know, that New England had to go through, you know, when before they didn't finish their perfect season. So, mm-hmm. But yeah, it'll be. I think this conversation ends in Arizona. I think Arizona's. I always default to the better team. Arizona's top three offense. They're a top four defense.
Yeah,
they're just really good, regardless of who they lost to. But even then, it could be a dogfight on Sunday night,
for sure.
Where the Bengals are disappointed, but you're not like, oh, they were exposed. I could see that being a last second thing.
And if they end up
on the road,
they end up 13-3 or 14-2. I mean, I do think it's important that they win one of those two games.
Yeah,
because if you do look back, you know, you can say, well, who have they beat?
Right,
a little bit. I mean, you can say that the Seahawks, who've been down, and the Steelers.
Yeah, in the end, when the schedules flush out, the Raiders might be one of the better teams that they've beaten. And that was back when they knocked David Carr out in the first half.
Yeah, they caught him at the right time.
Right, so.
I do think it's important for them to win at Denver or at Arizona in the big picture.
Right.
I do think that's something they need to do.
And Denver's
but
probably
if they,
the
but
one
if they end up 14-2 and those are their two losses, I still think they would go in pretty darn confident into the postseason. You know, and that, I mean, how could you not?
Right.
But I do think there's a difference between if they go in 14-2 and had a hiccup against the 49ers, but beat the Broncos.
Right.
I mean, that to me, there's a difference in that.
Right.
I think because they know that they have to be able to beat New England, Denver,
right,
Arizona's of the world in order to get to accomplish their end game. So we'll have lots of time to talk about that, but. I just can't believe we're talking about all this. It really is a crazy thing when you think about it. I mean, as good as you think a team is, for them to be sitting here at this and us talking this way is pretty wild. So what did we do? We did our midseason awards this past weekend.
Yeah.
Halfway point of the season, kind of just taking a look at everything. And we didn't really talk about it. We discussed the topics that we should have.
Right.
The ones that we should be picking, but we didn't really get too much into who we specifically would be choosing.
We didn't talk at other than...
Then there would probably be debates over this or that. That was really it, but we didn't really get into specifics, so we wanted to just let it play out. And we ended up with a few differences, a few debate points, although some of them were the same. We had MVP. We both had Andy Dalton, because if you didn't pick Andy Dalton, then you should be kicked off his beat. Defensive Player of the Year, we both had Geno Atkins.
Yeah.
Although I had a harder time with that than I thought I would.
Okay.
I thought it would be I felt like it was more of a slam dunk until I started really diving into it a little more and started weighing in Adam Jones.
Yeah.
And Carlos. But I do think a lot of Carlos's output has been because of Geno. Yeah. But if you really look at just straight production, as far as hurries, stops, a lot of those advanced numbers.
Yeah.
Carlos has been the more productive player, but I think the eye test tells you a lot of that's because of Geno.
Yeah, and I my sort of tiebreaker for that, and I think it's part of the nature of this team. I think it's part of Carlos's personality. I mean, he will say he's having a good year, but I mean, even on Monday afternoon, asking Carlos about, you know, chasing Michael Strahan and his personal goals for the Bengals season sack record. I mean, he goes right away to Adam Jones. He goes right away to Geno. I mean, he's like, well, yes, I'm doing some good things, but having Geno doing Geno things and not talking to anybody about it
of course, a
huge reason. So to me, like, I always kind of defer to the guys in that sense. So, Carlos Dunlap is having a fantastic season, but I think, you know, I test. Yeah, Geno is, to me, Geno, you see him affecting things even when Carlos maybe doesn't.
Yeah.
So I, you know, but again, you're talking about two Pro Bowlers.
Mm-hmm.
Two potential All Pros.
Yeah, I mean, 8.5 sacks at the halfway point for Carlos is a huge number. I mean, you're talking a guy on pace for 17 sacks. That doesn't happen all that often. I mean, I think because of what J.J. Watt has done and, you know, some of the numbers that have been put up, Justin Houston, of course, you know, you say, oh, okay, well, that's just the way the league is going. Yeah, well, it doesn't happen as often as you think.
Right.
And
Bengals season record is like 30 years old of 13.
Coy Bacon. No.
Well, officially, we
need to dive into this because I'm writing about statistical records for today, for tomorrow's paper. And
we had this debate with Carlos today, too.
I'm sure you did. Here's the thing. How can you not count? I don't care if the Bengals started recording it before in 76 when Coy Bacon had 22.
Right.
Okay. Just because the NFL didn't start recording until 83 doesn't make the franchise record any different. Because the Bengals are the ones that make the decision on when a sack is counted. And they were tracking it.
That's fair.
So since the Bengals have been tracking it, the franchise record is 22.
Right.
The NFL can recognize whatever it wants to.
Right.
The Bengals franchise record is determined by the Bengals. And the Bengals, in their record books, in their media guide, Coy Bacon, 22 sacks, 1976.
You, Butchie, and Carlos are going to have to fight this out, man.
Absolutely.
I think Butchie's on your side.
Carlos thinks he needs that record?
Carlos was like, well, officially it's 13. So he knows it's 22, but officially...
The NFL would say, but seeing as the NFL can't weigh in on Bengals franchise records, as far as I'm concerned, that Bengals decide what their franchise records are.
I think we need to email Greg Aiello on this.
We do. We need a team meeting on exactly how.
Right.
For me, he would need to crack 22. 13 is, that's not even a number he should care about. Congratulations.
Although you
set a franchise record that has an asterisk next to it, and you kind of know is BS.
Well,
right?
You know, I don't know.
I mean, is that something to be happy about?
You know what? Deegan Jones might have had 900 sacks for all I know, but nobody counted it. So, officially,
the Bengals
Bruce
did
Smith.
Count Coy Bacon sacks. That's just it. Yeah, nobody counted Deegan Jones, but here, where they decided to track it, they did count.
Yeah.
And Coy Bacon had 22. So... Do you mean to get Coy Bacon on the podcast? Is he alive?
I was gonna say if you could bring him back from the dead. Is he dead? He's gone.
Yeah, he's dead.
Yeah,
I did not.
Coy Bacon.
Yeah, I did not do research on that before.
Well, the only reason I know that is because Butchie told Carlos he was dead.
Oh, okay.
Because Butchie was like, I called him. Well, wait. Well, that was a while ago because he passed away.
Yeah. Well,
that's your soul, Coy Bacon.
But Coy still lives on in the Bengals record books.
Well, we're gonna, you know what? We're gonna be reading a lot more about Coy Bacon, whether he's crispy or not.
Whoa, yee!
You know what? I don't care. I go there. Ooh. Paul's grabbing his collar. I don't care.
I went there.
He's chilling with Tupac in Tahiti. For all we know, come on.
Coy faked it. Coy faked.
You don't
he's
know.
Hanging out.
Do you know?
You don't. Know.
I've never seen the body.
Didn't you know? Didn't you know he was Coy Machiavelli Bacon? That was his nickname. That's what he went by. Nobody knew that.
We're gonna set anger the whole so thing many. Up. Good thing podcast demographics are like in their like millennials.
Yeah,
some old dude listening is really mad at me right now.
They don't even know who Tupac is.
No,
people that listen to this are skewing to our young group, which is really even worse with our old pop culture references.
Yeah. Wait till you hear the song Paul Dana Jr. wants to go out.
Hey. I got no problem with. We need to teach the kids.
Yeah,
we need to teach the kids about some good old school stuff. All right,
all right. So
back to all right, back
let's
to
let's pull through these rest of these.
Let's back awards. Through the midseason.
So
awards.
we differed on a well, real quick. So we agreed that Tyler Eifert is the comeback of the year.
Yeah.
We also was it, and I think that was the only other one we agreed on.
Yeah.
So it was MVP, Defensive Player of the Year, and Comeback of the Year.
Yeah.
So that's, I don't know. I thought that was interesting.
You know what's funny is you could have maybe made an argument for Geno Atkins as comeback player of the year, even though he was healthy 100% of last year. Even though he played every game because he was kind of coming back from his former self. But still, Eifert is such a no-brainer for that. I don't think you could really deny. I mean, he's currently on pace to break the franchise record for touchdowns in a season. He can have as many. I have to go back and double check it, but he's going to set touchdown records NFL, not just.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of records that are out there. I mean, it's pretty remarkable if he gets 9 in the second half as he did in the first half, which I don't know that he will, but I'd still expect him to end up with 15 or 16. What else did we have?
Biggest surprise I thought was Andy Dalton.
Yeah.
Just because I don't know, and you went with the overall health of the team.
Yeah.
As sort of a, which, you know.
It's hard to say. Like, I thought the same thing. Well, Dalton is the obvious answer here, but. If you asked me, you could have rationalized before the season Dalton having a great first 8 games, right?
Right.
I would have been surprised.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't been not as surprised as I would if you told me they still haven't put anybody on IR.
IR, right.
And they've only missed 2 starts.
Right.
Is it 2 still after the
Thursday? Well, Ray Maluga and Andre Smith, so 3
yeah,
with George Iloka.
Three starts.
Right.
3 starts in 8 games in the NFL. There are teams that have 13 guys on IR. The Ravens have 13 guys on IR.
I think even the Panthers have like $30 million on IR,
right.
Whatever the heck it is. I mean, it's ridiculous.
It's incredible for them to have been as lucky and healthy, and we've documented that a lot. You read the story about their new changes, how they go about the health program, but I mean, that is, to me, beyond shocking.
Right.
I never thought I'd see that from any team.
Right.
You know, but Dalton is, it's very, very surprising. It's very surprising. I can't deny that, that it isn't surprising. He says this one is, to me, that angle is more surprising.
We disagreed on the play of the year.
Yeah.
I thought it was A.J. Green's 80-yard touchdown to Baltimore. You felt it was the game-tying field goal against Seattle.
You know what? And it was more just because of the rarity of it, and I thought the symbolism of it. As far as it being the actual like best play, no, it wasn't the best play. I could even argue that there was a better play, not only in this season, not only in that game, but on that same drive that I referenced, which was Tyler Eifert diving for that ball that set up the game-tying field goal against Seattle when he made that incredible catch. But I think the symbolism of the teamwork, the precision, the preparedness, and execution that play was, and running everybody off, running everybody on, setting up, boom, knocking it out, was perfect. And it was the type of thing that veteran teams accomplish without issue, and it's treated like business. And it was. It was a very business-like finish to what could have been and should have been an incredibly chaotic situation. And the fact that they'd never done it before, you know, they practice it all the time, makes it even more impressive.
Right.
And I just thought it kind of was more symbolic and awesome in general because you just don't see it all that often. I just thought it was more symbolic of how they've played and how they've sort of gone about their business this year.
Right. And that's why I picked actually the A.J. Green touchdown. Was there have been better catches. There have been more exciting scores. I mean, even though he broke a couple tackles, I mean, I can think of a couple actual efforts in the end zone that were more impressive, I guess. But I think it was symbolic. It was the first time they trailed. It was an Andy Dalton turnover and run back for a touchdown on the road in Baltimore. And yet, here's the guy that everyone wondered about. Would he fall apart? And one play, touchdown.
Yeah.
And then it sort of led to, of course, the second fourth quarter comeback.
Yeah.
And it sort of set the – and after every – you know, I think that week, even beforehand, we already had pinpointed the difference in Andy Dalton. And then after that game, everybody else sort of, I'm going to backpack ourselves.
Yeah, well, of course.
My arm doesn't hurt for it either.
No, I mean –
But, I mean,
just
it was –
what happened. It's just – these are just the facts.
Yeah, so it was just – it was a symbolic play for me as well.
Even though that play didn't even – I mean – there was another one later.
It was sort of what, but it, you know,
it was,
being the
I'm
first
with you.
One,
I'm
yeah,
with
being
you.
The first one is kind of what it meant. And then, you know, the fact that A.J. Green ran over a couple guys and kind of, you know, I thought it at least it was exciting too. 80 yards, come on, doesn't
it
happen often.
No, it was pretty impressive. I'll give you that.
We'll hit disappointment because like, that might roll into something for a second half. But our coach of the year, we disagreed.
Yeah.
You had offensive coordinator Hugh Jackson.
Look at you. Look at you sucking up to Marv.
And I went with the head coach.
Went with the head coach.
Yeah.
Who gets no credit around here. Never will.
No.
He just doesn't. He's always the reason they lose. He's never the reason they win. And you had to come in as an outsider and see the wrong in the ways.
Well, I piggybacked off your biggest surprise with health. I mean, because it all started to me, I mean, the head coach in this organization, I mean, and a lot of organizations have a lot of power, but Marvin really, really, really controls stuff here. And, I mean, he changed the schedule. He did all of these things along with their strength staff to
and change. He's involved in personnel.
And he's involved in personnel, and say what you want about clock management and some of those fine game points, but he and the reason you went with Hugh Jackson, but I also say the head coach allows the offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, those coaches to do their thing while setting the overall message, and the team is bought into that, and they're 8-0. So yeah, I hear you,
and he also hired Hugh Jackson.
Yes,
I mean, and so, but to me, what's made this team 8-0 has been one of the best offenses in football, and it's been the mastermind of Hugh Jackson. But more than all that, Hugh Jackson has been the one, when they gave him the job, his number one task, task numero uno, there probably isn't even a two or a three, was make Andy Dalton better.
Right.
Make him be the guy. And that's apparent. In his second year now with him, you see the change, you see everything, and it's working. And he's been able to turn him into this leader, which no one really thought he could be. And he's been aggressive, and he's been aggressive with Dalton, but also not overdoing. He's still only on pace for 516 attempts, which is only 20 or 30 more than he had last year when they really reined him in. And so, I mean, he's picked his spots beautifully. He's gotten the message across that you can't just continue to shove the ball in A.J. Green, and that's allowed this whole offense to flourish with Marvin Jones and Tyler Eifert and the reverse to Sanu, where it's just no one's even home. I mean, he's just done a great job of knowing when to push the buttons and making them happen. And you know what? Give him credit for going with Gio. He so badly wants Jeremy Hill to get on track to be that guy. And it's just not happening, but he's been confident enough to pull Jeremy in a game when he had fumbles and to go with Gio in the fourth quarter when he knows that he's the better guy and worry about the rest later. And I think that that says a lot. And he's turned his offense into the best in franchise history to this point,
yeah,
if it continues.
Quote of the year?
Yeah, I had to. It's the one that I tell people the most often because yeah, it just cracks good, me yeah. up the most. It's not symbolic of anything.
Right.
It's not anything except for something that just has made me laugh hysterically for a long time. And that was Kevin Zeitler in my story on these offensive line guys when he told me I ate 3 double stuffed Chipotle burritos in one sitting. And then the kicker on it, though, was as that was being discussed, and Andrew Whitworth was talking about how he tells us about this all the time, Russell Bodine chimes in with, "Those were dark days." Because those days are now past him.
Right.
He supposedly doesn't go to the double-stuffed 3 Chipotle burritos anymore, but
although
that's
if you do,
just mind-blowing.
If you do follow Kevin Zeitler on Instagram and Twitter, you saw what he ate for lunch on Sunday.
He's not that far away.
No, he's not that far away. My quote of the year was Marvin Jones. I almost went with 50, like kind of the anchor man, 50% of the time. It's 100% catch.
That was pretty
good. But no, when we talked to him about their sort of deep ball proficiency, it was that's what it's all about. Just run and homie, go get it.
Yes. Did you pull it off of NFL.com?
No, I think
is that where you got that?
Cincinnati.com.
Oh, okay, yeah. Okay. I didn't, because that's where I saw it. You know, was when they jacked it from us.
most improved was interesting. Yeah, I went with Carlos Dunlap. I mean, for some of the same reasons we talked about it, him being in the DPOY conversation, I thought made him. I mean, he's one sack away from tying his career record, which he set in 2010.
His rookie year.
His rookie year. I think he's just really, really taken a whole new level.
And he's done a really nice job stopping the run
this
year, which is a big part of his development. I'll agree with you on that. I had Adkins and Dalton as sort of my co on most improved, just from what they were last year to this year. I mean, the Adkins thing is just crazy. I mean, it just goes to show what something gets in somebody's head or something gets in the way. And credit to, you know, Paul Gunther and the defensive staff for allowing Geno to work through it.
Right.
And sticking by him and seeing what they've got because he's been so good. What else did we have?
Underrated.
It? Most
we
underrated.
Hit, yeah, we had a lot of categories. So underrated. You went with, we both, well, no, I forgot. We both agreed on Vinny Ray being an underrated player.
Yeah. Well, he is underrated.
Yeah, for a guy who plays like the entire game and can
and
provide.
No one talks about him, and they should. I mean, he's really been the glue that's held everybody together back there in what could have been a real weak spot on this team.
Right. And then overrated, we disagreed. I went with Jeremy Hill, and you went with safety Reggie Nelson.
I did.
Yeah.
Reggie would be overrated because I think we maybe were viewing what overrated meant differently. I feel like I was talking to Bengals fans, that Bengals fans are overrating somebody. And Reggie Nelson, he has three picks. He leads the team in interceptions, but how many of those just sail right to him?
Right.
He's got to be in the right spot.
Right.
Credit to him. I'm not saying that what he does isn't important, but I've also, you've seen him in the middle of these miscommunications. You've seen him miss tackles on a lot of these runs that we've talked about where guys have gashed them. It's been Reggie coming up and not been able to make the tackle. It's a rarity for him. That's been in the past, that's been really his strong point. We've just seen more of him missing tackles this year than we have in the past.
Right.
And so, to me, I think that's part of why for these eight games, from a Bengals fan's perspective, I think Reggie Nelson's a bit overrated in what he's done, especially when you see Sean Williams come in and start making some plays pretty quickly.
I went the other way, overrated being more of a media-driven thing, where Jeremy Hill, I mean, coming in as the new beat guy, I mean, it was Jeremy Hill. You know, rookie of the year or whatever, and his great performance, and he was going to be necessary in order to take this pressure off Andy Dalton and make this offense go, and he's essentially been a non-factor. Statistically, I mean, I know he's rushed for some touchdowns and he does matter in the red zone. You do need to pay attention to him. But right now, 3 yards a carry, you know, admittedly, he says he hasn't had any splash plays. Very few runs of 10 yards or more. When last year, if you go to Cincinnati.com on Monday, we broke it down and he had 20 runs of 10 yards or more last year. Many over 20 yards even. So I you know, he's there, but I felt he was a little overrated by people like ourselves. So that leads into our final category of biggest disappointments.
You had Dre.
And I had Dre Kirkpatrick.
Yeah.
And you had Jeremy Hill.
I had Jeremy Hill. For the same reasons you just talked about.
Yeah.
Because I think that the thought was that he was going to come in and be an all-pro running back, and just to struggle the way he has, I think has been a disappointment for everybody.
Yeah.
Everything you said.
Yeah. Well, and actually, Dre Kirkpatrick is one of the reasons I picked him was from what you said with Reggie.
Yeah.
Was, and so it's almost in tandem. Like, the two of them have had communication issues.
Right.
Dre has struggled with tackling, and he has struggled in coverage, in solo coverage. He has been targeted. Adam Jones is playing at a Pro Bowl level.
Absolutely.
So they go to Dre, and you haven't seen an interception, you haven't seen a forced fumble, you haven't seen the special plays that you had seen in flashes in the previous 2 years. So you could say that's our outside expectation on him that he's not living up to. But again, when you're talking about an 8-0 team and a fourth best scoring defense in the league, you have to nitpick.
Yeah. Well, and one of the big things that Dre was supposed to be bringing was he's had a magnet for the he's been a magnet for the ball. I mean, in his limited amount of snaps, his picks per snap early in his career, he was just kind of was an extremely high number. And this year, still doesn't have one. And he'll even laugh about how ridiculous it is that he dropped the one in the end of
the
Cleveland game.
The easiest one
that you ever had in your career. I mean, was right there, and he couldn't pull it in. So, I think. You know, we have him Tuesday night on Beyond the Stripes, so we'll talk him. We'll open with you calling him the biggest disappointment of the season, and see what he says. But Dre's like that. He'll be his toughest critic. He'll also pat himself on the back quite a bit.
Yeah.
But he's very open. So I'm sure we'll get into that. He told me after the game. He said, no, we got to talk about that on Tuesday. I got to get some stuff off my chest. You know, how he doesn't have his pick and how he dropped that one. So, you know, he's very open to talk about all that kind of stuff. Then the week after that, so a week from Tuesday, the day after the Monday Night Football game, we're going to have Domantopeko on. I can't believe we've not had him on in all the years. We're coming on episode 50. We've never had Domantopeko on, who's been here the whole time. Super outgoing guy.
Yeah.
And he's going to bring his guitar. It's going to be fantastic. So we'll have all of that. Do we want to bring in our Jeremy Hill audio? We were talking about Jeremy Hill's struggles. Let's do that.
Because we
just talked a little bit about Jeremy's struggles, but he did talk about that this week and about his lack of splash plays and things like that. So I do want to bring you some of that audio of what he had to say when he was talking about his season thus far. So here's a little bit of Jeremy Hill.
time to, were you able to evaluate, self-evaluate, team evaluate at all? Or what was, what's kind of the, how do you approach this mid-season type spot, especially when you had a few days off?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think for us, I think it's just a new start for us. You know, just going off of everything that we've accomplished so far. I think we've done a lot of great things, especially as an offense. You know, we've, you know, there's not too many teams get to say they've been 8-0, so it's huge. So we got to take what we've done and just improve on those things and just improve on the things that we want to get better as, is run game stuff and just hitting some more deep shots down the field. And that starts with the run game and getting our play action game going. So, you know, like I said, we've done a lot of great things, but we can definitely improve.
How about for yourself? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it's you guys, you and Gio are kind of doing your thing, I think 10th, 11th in the league in rushing as a team. Is that kind of how you view where your individual run game's at, you and him together, or do you kind of look at yourself too?
I don't think it's a little bit of everything. I think for me, I just personally, I got to step it up. You know, I haven't played to my potential. Everyone knows that, including myself and my coaches. So it's on me. It's not on anyone else. So I just got to continue to keep pounding, keep practicing hard. I think I've been practicing hard. I just got to continue to, you know, find another a gear in there and practice, and hopefully can transfer over to the game. So I'm not really too stressed about it. I mean, when you're 8-0, I mean, some stuff is, you know, you can kind of overlook. So, but I definitely want to get to where I was last year and continue to work towards that.
Have you diagnosed on what you want to do different? And have you diagnosed on maybe what you think you're not doing as well as last year?
I mean, obviously that, you know, I think I haven't broken as many tackles as I have, and I just got to continue to just not stress about it, but just make the special plays. I think there's some special plays for me to make out there. I just got to go out there and do it. But saying that, I don't want to, you know, become a distraction, because it's not about me at all. It's really a team thing, and I think, you know, we've been doing great as a team. Everyone has stepped up and made their plays when they were called upon to make them, so we just got to continue to do that.
Second half of the season last year was where you really started to turn it up. Is there a factor into that? Are you a guy who needs to get into a rhythm, or are you looking forward to that, I guess, now that you kind of are halfway through the season?
To me, you should start week one the way you're supposed to play. But, you know, last year's last year. Everyone keeps bringing it up. But it is what it is. Man. I just got to, like I said, make no excuses. I just got to step up and play better. And I will. I will.
All right. So let's wrap this here in the last few minutes. One last topic. We've talked about Cedric Ogbuehi here for a little while, and it looks like he's finally going to come back to practice this week. We talked to him a number of times in the last couple months, and he basically told us, he's done with his rehab. I mean, he's just waiting.
Right.
Just waiting to come off PUP. So he looks like he's going to be at practice and start the clock on him.
Yes.
So you don't have 3 weeks for him to be activated or go on IR. I have to imagine they basically have made a decision that in 3 weeks they're going to get rid of somebody or assume someone gets hurt.
Yeah, and he's not the only one. Sean Porter is also going to return to practice Tuesday, and which is an interesting development as well.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it is interesting. From what we've learned, it's fairly coincidental that Andre Smith had a concussion that missed the game. It has really nothing to do with it. It's a little early for said.
Yeah.
People in the front office were not ready for this.
No.
So the coaches went out with this decision to get that clock started.
Yeah.
But it's so you're right. I mean, you're talking about a team that, you know, I'm sure at this point, as you mentioned earlier, they thought we'd have 2-3 guys on IR. It's like Devontae's perfect. They had to cut somebody who was completely healthy.
Yeah.
And obviously at one point felt could contribute. So in 3 weeks, you know,
we'll see where they stand.
They're going to have to make a call on.
There's got to be a point where they have to be sitting there saying someone is going to get hurt.
Right.
I mean, there's just no. I mean, or they're willing to get rid of somebody if that doesn't happen.
Right.
They hope they don't have to, but if that doesn't happen, they'd be, because what you can't do, you couldn't put him on IR after 3 weeks.
No,
because there's no way because you might need him.
Right.
If Whitworth and Andre Smith go down or Jake Fisher gets hurt or whatever,
right,
you're going to need that guy.
Yeah.
I mean, and so, you know, so what we know is in 3 weeks, somebody's going to go.
Yeah.
Whether it's somebody that's hurt or somebody that's healthy, we'll find out, but clearly the coaches are ready to get him ready, because if they do need him for the second half of the season, they need to see what the guy looks like.
Right.
He's never practiced here.
Yeah.
So they've got they obviously want to get a view of him, and so we'll see how that goes starting this week.
That's a pretty good. That's a juicy nugget for us to go out on at BBP. We always give somebody a little something.
We love to give you the juice at the end. Yep. We always got that juice at the end.
Now we can talk about who they're going to cut.
Who they're going to cut
next week? Next, like Gervontez. Next 3 weeks, who they're going to cut?
Yep,
that's it. Sean Porter start. Hey, get ready for it.
That's it. You can't keep cutting Greg Little. He gone.
Exactly. Right. You can't keep cutting Greg
Little. They gotta find somebody else where they want to go with that. So we'll see. Well, anyway, so we're gonna head out now and wrap this up for you. But hey, you know what? We're in the middle. We're entering game two of three on night games. You know, they went Thursday night. They're gonna go Monday night. They're gonna go Sunday night. It only seems right as they try to work out of their primetime reputation in order to sort of prepare themselves, their rehearsal for their big stage at the end of the year, that we bring in some Bob Seger. Because, kids, Bob Seger was very good. He is very good. If you don't know him, you need to find him on your iTunes and just check it out, okay? But little night moves, because they're working on their night moves.
They are working on them.
And there, so far, the work has been good.
Yeah.
One down, two to go, but they're working on their night moves because they're going to need them later, you know? Yeah. I hope you kids don't mind. We really have proved. I mean, we've made like four old man references.
We've only gone further back in time.
We have. And we
went from Tupac to Ghostbusters to Bob Seger night moves. This is just bad.
Yeah, yeah. Bad. But you know what? We're just teaching them, we're learning them. We're teaching them exactly about a little bit of history for all our millennials that are on board on this. We've got you hooked up. But anyway, let's go out with a little bit of Bob Seger. Of course, every single Tuesday we will have these. Next week will probably be pushed back a little bit because of the Monday night game. But still, you'll get – don't worry. Your BBP will be in your hands as soon as we can get it to you. But keep looking out for that. And hopefully we will see you around out there. As the Bengals try to chase their way to 8-0. Bob Seger, thank you for joining us. Here's your night moves. We'll talk to you next week.
I was a little too tall, could have used a few pounds. Tight pants, points, hollering out. She was a black-haired beauty with big dark eyes. And points all her own, sitting way up high. Way up firm and high. Out past the cornfields where the woods got heavy. Out in the back seat of my 60 Chevy. Working on mysteries without any clues. Working on our night moves. Trying to make some front page driving news. Working on our night moves. Summertime. In the sweet summertime. We were in love, oh no, far from it. We were searching for some high in the sky song. We were just young and restless and bored, living by the sword. And we'd steal away every chance we could. To the back room, to the alley, or the trusty woods. I used her, she used me, but neither one cared. We were getting our share. Working on our night moves. Trying to lose a